Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And joining us now is the author of a book called Screening Reality, How Documentary Filmmakers Reimagined America, John Wilkman. Thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Well, it's a pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, Ryan.
I really enjoyed our last conversation, and I really enjoy documentaries. And I've realized probably the two biggest series that people have been enjoying over the last couple of months since they've been socially distancing, and with the absence of sports and whatnot, people are really looking for things to entertain them. The two things, Tiger King on Netflix and The Last Dance, which was the ESPN documentary on Michael Jordan. And these are the things that people are talking about. There's no, to me, on social media, no one's talking about anything else when it comes to entertainment online or entertainment through their cable. It's always these two documentaries that took America by storm. And I wanted to ask you why you think people are just drawn to documentaries during this time.
Well, both of those are examples of entertainment value, which is something that is developed over time as far as documentaries are concerned. And also, they sort of represent some of the issues about how documentaries are changing and have changed recently. Tiger King, of course, was an enormous phenomenon. And I guess they're doing a sequel and a Hollywood movie, too, on top of that.
I know they're already talking about how they can expand it out, because as soon as it became a viral hit, it seems like they started to stretch it immediately and tried to find new things to add in there.
Well, it's interesting that it's part of a very, very old tradition of filmmaking. The first films, a scholar has called them, the cinema of attraction, in the sense of the way a carnival attraction brought people in, whether it's the bearded lady or the fat man or the Siamese twins. And people went to see the things and to struggle and to watch them. And the earliest movies really had a quality of that. They, in the 1890s, if you wanted to see Little Egypt, the belly dancer, you looked into this little box and for 20 or 30 seconds you saw this sort of woman wriggling around, and it was something you didn't see in everyday life. And also there was a famous muscle man named Sandow, and you could watch Sandow flexing his muscles wearing just basically just a diaper. So these kinds of films, and of course a shocking but also huge example of this was watching an elephant being electrocuted. And audiences paid their nickel or whatever it was to watch these fascinating these things that were unusual. And I think Tiger King has that quality to it. Plus, the quality is a kind of this exotic, eccentric group of characters, but it has an additional element to it, which is also really popular these days, is this idea of a possible murder mystery.
Oh, yeah, the crime aspect.
And that's also huge. And so basically it's almost like, watching Sandow, wriggle his muscles and Little Egypt. So it's an old tradition. And going back to 1963, there's a film called Mondo Cani, which was an Italian documentary. And it went around and showed all kinds of weird and horrifying things, like religious ceremonies and where people flagellated themselves with whips and, you know, various people eating, you know, different cultures eating strange animals like bugs and stuff. And it was a huge popular hit. And he even had a popular song. Mondo Cani became a, you know, a pop 10 hit song.
Interesting.
So there's a long tradition behind that. I mean, the issue basically is the way I see Tiger King, and I'm not alone. In the end, it's really not about anything. It's about just watching weird things. It's certainly not about saving tigers in the wild. you know, which is theoretically, it was, you know, the original idea the filmmakers were inspired by, you know, was the film about SeaWorld and the dolphins who were, you know, being in captivity and being, you know, turning violent and it ultimately the film is Blackfish. Ultimately, it caused SeaWorld to stop the dolphin shows.
Yeah, I don't think this is motivating anyone to take any sort of action. When I watched it, I was personally thinking to myself, man, tiger people are crazy. And I was just thinking about the culture behind it. And then I thought, well, to be able to identify these type of characters, if you're a filmmaker or a documentary maker and you see that, it's like, wow, look at all these different elements that we know will appeal to people's the side of them that likes to watch this sort of, I don't want to use the word freak show, but it's the type of idea that it's so strange and bizarre and so multi-layered, and it's got so many different elements to it that are used as, you know, entertainment features. It was just so interesting for me to watch it. And so many people online, that's all they could talk about. They were dressing up as the characters. They were making memes. They were doing all these things. And I also wondered, and maybe you can help me understand this side of it, if you're someone that enjoys documentaries and you enjoy that side of it and you enjoy viewing them and seeing the work that goes into it and seeing the storytelling that goes into it, does a series like Tiger King help or hurt the genre?
Well, it's a mixed bag, and I wouldn't hesitate to use the term freak show. I mean, going back to the cinema of attractions, that's what it is. It's these oddball characters. I mean, it had all the elements. You know, it was, you know, this wild animals, and but another element of it, which I think is really important and is part of where documentaries are these days, is essentially this idea of life as a performance. The cameras are on all the time. Even when Joe Exotic is attacked by one of the tigers, the guy's shooting. They don't even stop. They keep filming it. Mm. They don't try to stop the tiger from attacking him because they know it's going to be a good sequence. And there's a guy who seemingly commits suicide off camera while the cameras are rolling.
Right.
And so it basically turns life into this exotic kind of, literally exotic, kind of freak show. And for entertainment. Now, you can argue that, well, you know, sure, okay, maybe it's distasteful. You've got an elevated taste. You don't, you know, you're a cultured person. You would never do watch that. Well, you know, that's part of it. But at the same time, it portrays itself as some reflection of the truth of what the world is actually like. And there is an element of truth in it. But what happens when the film is over, there's another whole thing that happens. People begin to reveal things that weren't true that were shown in the film. Or distortions, or things that were left out, and suddenly, you know, you're realizing that if there was any kind of truth in there, it was often sacrificed for the entertainment shock value of what was in the film.
Yeah,
and that, you know, that's a big issue today, because, you know, we can talk about a couple of other documentaries in addition to that, is that you know, the it becomes harder and harder. You have to be a detective. There's no way I could have, or you could have, looked at Tiger King and said, oh, wait a second, he never had a relationship with that guy who's not really gay. He says he's gay, but, you know, he's not. We didn't know that. And you find out later that was the case. Or, you know, Carol Baskin's, you know, husband, everyone thinks he was eaten by tigers. Well, everybody doesn't think he was eaten by tigers. You know, it's a rumor, but that's not the primary thing about it. And But the thing that makes it intriguing is that the cameras are running all the time. So here is Joe Exotic literally threatening the life of Carol Baskin on camera. Mm-hmm. He brings out a gun and shoots a mannequin of her.
Yeah.
And so it's that outrageous stuff. So when you're not just, this has happened well before the quarantine, but when you're in this world that's confusing and frustrating and you don't understand it and you don't know what's going on, it's a way of releasing a lot of, you know, your own pressures. And in a way that it's so exaggerated, you find it's amusing and it's fun and it becomes addictive in a way.
It's a wild world we live in. there's so many nooks and crannies.
Even crazier than your own life.
You know? I know.
Crazier than your own life.
John Wilkman is the author of Screening Reality, How Documentary Filmmakers Reimagined America. We're going to talk to him some more coming up next. Don't go anywhere. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
St. Louis's weather station, KMOX.
Welcome back to Overnight America. I'm your host, Ryan Recker, with documentary filmmaker John Wilkman. He's got a book called Screening Reality, which you can go and find right now. I think you're going to enjoy. And with everyone consuming documentaries lately, I thought it was a right time to bring him back on the show. Here in Missouri, we just had the viral video of the people going to the Lake of the Ozarks, and they were going into the pools,
right.
They weren't socially distancing, and that becomes big news. And you can look at that and say it's wild. But then keep in mind, there are people that raise tigers in private zoos that also could perhaps be put into jail, being found guilty of, you know, paying hitmen and evading taxes and selling tigers across state lines and weapons and murder accusations. And it's just an insane world we live in. Sometimes you think to yourself, how in the world can anyone keep up with it? But I wanted to ask you, too, about the Michael Jordan thing, because this is a completely different side. You take someone that is maybe one of the most famous figures in the entire world. Certainly when he was in playing, he was maybe outside of sports, he might have been one of the most famous celebrities in the entire world with Michael Jordan. You go back and you see a series put on and people just absolutely love it. They love the behind the scenes. They love learning more about the things that they were really interested in. I think we saw that with some other documentaries, maybe not as wholesome, with like the O.J. Simpson one that came out a few years ago.
Yeah.
But people also, if it's not the bizarre, they also like to consume the things that are familiar and they like to learn more in depth about them. And I don't know if it's necessarily a reason for them to be educated. I think it's because they look at it as a way of the nostalgia is interesting and it's just entertaining in general to find something familiar to them.
But I don't know whether you're aware that, you know, Ken Burns made a rare statement. He came out, you know, very much against the film.
Really?
Yeah. And his reasoning was, and of course, I hesitate because I haven't watched it all myself either, so I hesitate to be in detailed critique. But his criticism, which is another whole aspect of this, is that the portrait of Jordan was controlled by Jordan and his company.
Right.
And so it, you know, as honest as you think you want to be, you can also control what you show and what you don't show. And Burns was quite upset by that. He saw this is the track we're going into where you basically, you know, you personalize or privatize the truth so much that you don't necessarily get a full picture out of it.
Oh.
So the O.J. film, which I think is a very interesting film because, again, it takes the viewer, and I think Jordan film does this a little bit too, takes the viewer outside the context of what we all know. We saw the murder. We saw the Bronco chase. We saw the trial. But he says, let's look at a larger landscape of American culture that produced O.J. Simpson, produced the world around this crime. And so I thought that was an excellent and a very well done film. And so I said, I can't talk in great detail, but it's interesting that Burns, and I see what he's saying.
Well, you know, I would almost,
there's that line between.
Yeah, I would almost rebut that in a certain way. And the way I would look at it, if I was Michael Jordan, I would think, if I'm going to put my name on anything, even if it's something that is outside of my control, the thing is, I know people are going to be drawn to it. And when you have your reputation and you're leery of the way people may misrepresent you in order for them to gain notoriety and giving them permission to perhaps misrepresent, or at least what they would look at as a misrepresentation of what happened, in order for them, you know, in case of, you know, the producers, whoever it is, may just try to sensationalize it or try to distort it in a way just to gain attention. I would think, you know, I'm big enough of a figure where I don't want that. You know, I've stepped away from bigger things. You know, I've given up millions and millions of dollars to make appearances because I'm more interested in the way that I control my old image. So I don't want them to make it this and run away with it, because then ultimately it's gonna kill my brand. So if they're gonna do this, I gotta have some control over it. I totally understand that side of it though.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the word you used is brand, in the sense it's an image of who you are. It's your construction of who you are. And you're absolutely right. He is controlling his brand, which is an enormously powerful and influential and liked brand. But human beings aren't brands. They're human beings, and they have good things and bad things, and they make mistakes, and they do, you know, wonderful things, and it's more complex than that. But I think what Burns is getting at is just your issue, is that this is a film that polishes the brand and creates an image of someone less than a real portrait of who they are, because it's a construction of who they are based on fact, but polished in a way that anyway, I mean, it worse things have happened, you know, than that.
Yeah, and
but
it's it's like when you see people slap the unauthorized logo or something on a piece to kind of indicate that there was no cooperation from the subject. And I think they were making it so, like, if they were to do something on Jordan and it would be unauthorized, then it would feel illegitimate. So they had to have him included. And the only way to include him would to give him at least the ability to rebut some of the things and the issues that were brought up.
Yeah, I think, you know, you can be a wonderful person and do a film about being a wonderful person. I think that there is a tendency, and this goes back to the feelings of Tiger King and films like that, the audience could be disappointed in which a film comes out and says, okay, he's some minor problems, you know, with him, you know, and he did have a big ego, but he matched what he said he was going to do. Basically, he's this wonderful godlike figure. And some people would say, oh, you know, that's boring. You know, what did he do? Did he have some secret? Was he a drug dealer when he was young? I mean, give me something more, you know?
Yeah.
And so you get the other side, which is also not very good, you know, because, again, the three-dimensional view is not easy to do. But you look at a film like Hoop Dreams, which I don't know if you remember that film. That was done a few years back about two kids, poor kids in Chicago. Who dreamt of playing in the NBA. And the filmmakers of the company, Kartemkin Films in Chicago, followed them for 5 years. And through this, you know, system, which found young, talented basketball players, were very poor, got them scholarships to a good high school that had a good team and a good coach, and then carried them, you know, put them in a position where they could be looked at by the NBA. Neither one of them really made it to the NBA, but it's a fascinating film, because, you know, it's about dreams, and that's appealing to audiences. Everyone dreams, gee, I would, you know, wish I had played in the NBA, I could, or whatever your dream is. So they're dreaming of that, and you see the difficulties these poor kids have. Just that was their ticket out to be, and they were potentially good basketball players, and but like most, 99% of good high school and even college basketball players, they never make the NBA. So that still was satisfied to audiences, even though in the end they didn't do it, because what was satisfying to audiences, and certainly to me, was the dream. And they realized that the dream is a difficult one. And yet you admire these kids who don't give up on their dream.
Wow.
And, you know, and they don't become, you know, NBR all-stars or anything like that. One of them has an injury, which means he really can't continue his career. The other one never really, you know, makes the cut. But in some ways, it's still a very satisfying, very moving film, while being very honest.
What do you think that says about the culture we've seen in the last maybe 5 or 6 years where individuals like to upload their daily routines to a YouTube, for example, or a streaming service like that, where they try to document their lives in order to, you know, their dream is probably to become famous or try to find a way to make money or capitalize off of their day-to-day or whatever it is. I think in general, when you look at documentaries like that and you look at the dream and you look at the journey, I think that that is just one of those basic human characteristics, that there is that sort of that dream that they want, and maybe they don't know exactly how to get there. Maybe they will never get there, but there is that journey to try to get there in some ways. And you see on YouTube a lot of people trying to live that out and try to document it, thinking that it's going to lead them to their dream, which ultimately it doesn't.
Yeah, well, there's a long tradition, again, I talk about this in Screening Reality, a tradition that goes back into the 60s of the personal film. Probably the most famous early personal filmmaker is a guy named Ross McElwee. And he did a film called Sherman's March. And he grew up in North Carolina to a upper middle class family in North Carolina, ended up going north, went to Harvard, and made a movie about this feeling that he had about his mixed attitudes about the two cultures of the North and his experiences in the South, particularly as it related to the Southern women. He was a single guy. He wanted, you know, like all single guys wanted to find the, you know, right girl and all that. So it's just musing on his own life as he travels through. And of course, the irony is, you know, the term Sherman's March, that, you know, he's going through the South and not necessarily burning and rampaging, but he's looking for himself in his upbringing. And so it's a very interesting film. And he made a number of other films as well. The issue really is, like anything, is that, sure, it's a great opportunity now with YouTube and cameras that you can have. But it really comes down to, in the end, the difference between a thoughtful evaluation of yourself and your attitudes about the world versus simply narcissism.
Hmm.
I just like to see myself on camera.
Hmm, interesting.
And I think I'm fascinating, and you may not think so. In fact, maybe a lot of people don't think you're fascinating.
But, you know, the try anyway. And they have the ability and free. The barriers have been lifted. It's not that difficult to do this sort of thing. With smartphones, you can record yourself, post it, and there's almost zero effort involved with it. Before, there's a lot of effort that would go into making a film.
Well, I've taught off and on, and I taught at USC, and I would, students often, if they want to make their first film, inevitably often the first film they want to make was about some personal experience of theirs, some personal passion of theirs. So that, you know, I mean, someone would say, oh, I just love, you know, poodles, and I want to do a film about poodles and how fascinating they are, and my relationship to my poodle, and how my poodle is so special, and I, you know, he and I or she and I have this wonderful relationship. And I say, yeah, you can do a film about poodles, but, you know, what's going to stretch you is, why don't you do a film about cats? But I don't like cats. But that's what it's all about. And the question is, what a documentary does for the filmmaker should also do to the audience is take you to a different place, take you away from yourself, not into yourself.
Yeah.
And so, or someone would say, oh, my grandma is a really fascinating woman, and I'm sure she is, but for your first film, do your film about someone else's grandma.
We're going to continue with our guest, John Wilkman. He's an author, also a documentary filmmaker, and his book is called Screening Reality, How Documentary Filmmakers Reimagined America. This is Overnight America on KMOX.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And so
sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
News Radio 1120 KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals. This is Overnight America, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com on KMOX.
Make sure to go give us a like on Facebook. Ryan Recker Radio is how you find it. And we're going to continue with our guest, John Wilkman. He's an author and also a documentary filmmaker. The book's called Screening Reality, How Documentary Filmmakers Reimagined America. When it comes to documentaries, what are your personal interests?
Well, I'll give you a short trip. You read the first chapter and I summarize my career in a kind of clever way without being too braggadocio, because a lot of my work parallels or is connected to the development of documentaries. So if you read the prologue, it tells the story of my career. I started at CBS working with Walter Cronkite on the CBS documentary unit on a series called The 20th Century, historical series. And most recently, I was nominated for 3 Emmys on a series called Moguls and Movie Stars, The History of Hollywood, a seven-hour series
for
Turner Classic Movies. And I've done a film about Chicano rock and roll, which has won awards. So a number of films for HBO. I'm primarily a filmmaker. The book is about what I know a lot about, having been a filmmaker, but I'm not a professional historian in that sense. Yeah.
So were you employed by CBS at the time, or were you independent?
I worked for CBS for seven, when I was just starting out, 7 years for CBS. Then I went independent and I worked as an independent producer for PBS and independent clients. The Ford Foundation sponsored films that I did. I worked, then I did a lot of work for HBO.
Yeah.
I did work for A&E, PBS. I guess I mentioned PBS.
Did you work at all with the radio division, or was it all the television side?
It was all the television side, although I knew some of the radio people. But I mean, I knew Charles Carroll. I worked with Charles Carroll, who had done both radio and films for CBS.
Oh, that's great. You know, I've been putting together a series, at least trying to document the history of KMOX as a radio station, and they were probably the crown jewel, they said, of the CBS radio division. And I didn't know if you're familiar with them at all when you worked with CBS, because, you know, some of the names you hear, the Walter Cronkites and the Dan Rathers and things like that, that have popped up, but were also contributors in ways to KMOX based on just the power that this radio station yielded. And of course, Walter Cronkite being a Midwest person, he was guest on the radio station back
then.
Well,
he's a Missouri guy.
Yeah.
You know, Cronkite was a, I mentioned in the book, I mean, Fred Friendly was born in Polecat Creek outside of Greensboro, North Carolina. These are people who came from the heartland in many ways. Dan Rather, of course, came from Texas.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that would be fascinating. I'm working now, actually. I think I may have mentioned last time we talked, I'm working on a new book on the history of jazz.
Oh, cool.
Early jazz.
Very cool.
And that, of course, involves, it calls St. Louis, and it involves, you know, Sedalia, and it involves a lot of stuff in Missouri and this is the turn of the century, 19th century. But that's just following, you know, it follows my curiosity. And the key word, you know, I think what I usually say to young people, they ask, well, why do you do this? And And what I say basically is, and certainly my film work and more recently the books I've written, but mainly the film work, I go out and I see something and I look at it and I go, wow. And then I make a film about it. And then I show that film to somebody else and they look at the film and they go, wow. And that's what it's all about. It's sharing. It's sharing wows.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
I never knew that. Or I never knew that. I never saw that. I thought I understood all about, Michael Jordan or, Chicano rock and roll, but I didn't know nothing. This is fascinating. Wow. And so it's enriching people's experiences in a way, but it's really the pleasure of saying, I sort of found this fun and interesting. I hope you do too. And here's a film that's going to help you show you what I saw and what I learned.
I think it's just beautiful. The book came out just a couple of months ago, and it's still doing very well, and it's still getting some great reviews, Screening Reality. What's the best place for people to find it?
Well, I mean, of course, hopefully you can find a way to support your local bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
It's the economy is really being shaken by the virus. But definitely I would try to get, even if they have to order it, I think that would be a good way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, online, it's an audio book if you want to listen to it rather than read it. It's on Kindle, and you can get it either directly from the publisher, that's Bloomsbury Press,
mm-hmm.
Or you can get it from Barnes & Noble or from Amazon. And so far the hardback is what's out so far. But as I said, it's an audio book. It's a Kindle book. And, it's not, you read it, so, it's written in a very kind of, I think, approachable style. I mean, one of the best reviews, I don't know whether do you know Leonard Maltin?
Well, of course, that's a very famous
film critic.
Yeah. From the very popular in the 90s, but I remember him a lot.
Yeah. Well, Leonard Maltin, gave me this fabulous review in which he just said, this is a monumental piece of work. He said, I'll be consulting this regularly from now on.
Oh.
And the critic from the Los Angeles Times, I mean, you can't write these things. It just says that, he said that the, see if I can find the quote here. It's authoritative, accessible, elegantly written. This is the history of American documentaries we've been waiting for.
Wow, that's awesome.
So they're terrific reviews. And so people get scared away and they say, oh, it's all about history. But really what I try to do in the book, it's about people, these people who made these films. Why did they make them? How did they make them? How did they succeed? How did they fail? Why did they do it? And then what impact did they have on our country? How did they, first of all, what did our country do to inspire them to make these films? And then in turn, how did these films have an impact, if any, on our country? So it's a story of America. It's a story of a fascinating group of people, everybody, explorers and inventors and entrepreneurs and reporters and activists and, it's this incredible cast of characters, all of whom are struggling with this sense of what is the truth and how do you convey it in a movie.
Yeah.
And in the process, they're kind of a parallel history of America as it's seen through the eyes of these filmmakers.
Screening Reality, How Documentary Filmmakers Reimagined America. I know that people are dying to get back into bookstores. I miss the smell of bookstores. you can't replicate that.
Sure.
You have to walk in, and it's once you get that, it brings you to a certain mindset, and you can only get that by going into bookstores, really. I guess you can stick your nose in a book, but it's not the same. You have to get the whole thing. And there's a local bookstore here that actually sells scented candles that make it smell like a bookstore in your home. So that's, an option, too, if you really want to do that. I got to say,
that's terrific.
I think it's wonderful that all the work and everything that goes into Screening Reality, but also the willingness to come back on and talk more about some of these cultural pop hits that we see in the quarantine months where people are just consuming these type of documentaries. Thank you for talking about that with us tonight, John Wilkman.
Well, I enjoy it very much, Ryan. And if you ever want to continue to blab, as you can hear, I'm happy to blab. If you want to talk about documentaries, I'm your guy.
John Wilkman, he joins us on the TDK Technologies guest line. And what a great book, Screening Reality, getting great reviews online. And if you like documentaries, you'll learn a lot from that one. This is Overnight America, KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
I really enjoy documentaries. I still haven't had that chance to go see the Michael Jordan one, but I know it's on my list of things that I want to see. I started watching a documentary on Netflix, and I can't even remember what it's called. I watched the first episode, and it covered the trial, the Jenny Jones trial from the 90s, and I thought, ooh, this is pretty good. And then what happened after that? Oh, it just got progressively more progressive the more you watched it. And I was like, oh, come on. You had to sneak in a good one at the start to get me interested, and then it had to go completely downhill from there. Yeah, Netflix has got some interesting mini-documentaries. There's one that I really enjoy called The Toys That Made Us, and it goes back into the history of some of the very popular toys through the years. And the popular toys being, you know, here's G.I. Joe, here's Barbie, here's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, here's, you know, it's very, very cool. Wrestling action figures. Oh, they're about an hour long, and they do a great job with it. It's a great era for documentaries and documentary filmmakers. Every night we've been doing this thing, it's the patriotic song of the night. And the idea of the patriotic song is just a reminder that we are going to get through this, and we're American strong, man. We are able to have a problem and somehow persevere, and hopefully we come out of this stronger, which we've done in the past with some of the problems that have faced this country. So this patriotic song is just a reminder we're in this together. We're going to get through it. It's Brooks and Dunn, Only in America. And by the way, I hope you enjoy these. We're going to be back for the next hour, and I want to talk a little bit about swimming pools and what happened in Lake of the Ozarks. It's Overnight America on KMOX.
Traffic jam, staring at the faces in a rearview mirror, looking at the promise of the promised land. One kid dreams of fame and fortune, one kid helps pay the rent.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.